Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to the UnitedWeStrike.com Radio Marathon. It is Saturday, April 11th, 2015. My name is Matt Navarro, host of the New World Order Report and producer here at UnitedWeStrike.com. I'd like to thank our listeners for the first time. We have them on board. The folks over at American Freedom Radio, I'd like to say hello to them. And for the first time, we're on Wolf Spirit Radio simulcasting. I'd like to thank JP for that and Danny over at American Freedom Radio for carrying us. And stay tuned, because after this half-hour segment with our current host, we'll have our roundtable. I'd like to bring on this month, I'm glad to have both of them back. They're always so much fun. Vinnie Eastwood and Suzanne Pozzo. Good afternoon.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, sir.
Because I happen to be in New Zealand, which apparently every American thinks is Australia, and like they're the same thing.
Not really, but...
That's like calling England and Europe the same thing.
Yeah.
But Vinny is in the future, folks. He is a time traveler.
It is already tomorrow, and I only need, in order to broadcast, 1.21 gigawatts.
So he knows what's going to happen tomorrow, folks. So ask him questions. Email him.
Well, go ahead, guys. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was going to delve into the psychic realm of the mainstream media and newspapers in order to predict the future from tomorrow. But if anybody's got anything better than that, let's go for your life.
Well, I am a journalist. I got tons of news, but...
Oh. Suzanne, sorry to interrupt you. There is something I really need to talk about. Jordan Maxwell, right? Now, there's these dudes who got him to sign a contract. Now, I don't know what people are like, but getting a 70-something-year-old man who spent his entire life researching into their cult to sign a contract that means that you, the guy who structured the contract, own him. Everything he's ever created and everything he ever will create. Okay, that's what's going on here. If nobody's heard about this, there's these dudes that have done this to Jordan Maxwell. And what's happening now is they've deleted my last Jordan Maxwell interview, which was about the Jehovah's Witnesses being exposed. That was done with Santos Bonacci. So I recorded the show. Santos participated and Jordan Maxwell was there. And these guys who hold this contract didn't have any part in it whatsoever, right? But they make a copyright claim against the video, which had like 50,000 hits. And it got taken down by YouTube. Now, I've disputed this, but I'm not 100% sure. It's in one of those gray areas where they didn't in any way help to make the video or the broadcast, yet they've got alleged paperwork to certify that they own Jordan's content, even content that doesn't exist yet, which means anybody who ever interviews Jordan in the future, that content is owned by somebody else, with or without your knowledge, with or without your consent, with or without your participation in the signing of said contract. Can I get a response to this? Because this seems insane, unfair, yes. and criminal, and therefore it's probably legal.
Well, you know, I do have a paralegal degree, so I do understand the law, and I'm trying to look at it with my paralegal cap on right now. When did he sign this contract? Does he have a copy of the contract?
Don't know. I think maybe a couple of years ago, and then terms of a copy of the contract, I don't know. I think almost all of his possessions got burned up in a fire about a day before I was meant to interview him. The warehouse that his stuff was stored in had a massive fire in it, in the exact area where his belongings were. And I think they lost about like a quarter or a fifth of the building. And that was the day before an interview. So that was, I don't know, maybe a bit suspicious. It could have been one of those little synchronistic coincidences, the universe telling him that he's got to start again from scratch at the age of like 70 plus. I don't know, it could be
something else. I mean, no offense to Jordan Maxwell at all. I have total respect for the man. Has he been deemed mentally incompetent, unable to sign documents of a legal stature?
I wouldn't know.
You got to sit back down with him and talk to him, maybe even privately, and find out some of these details so that we can understand how these people got a hold of it. If Jordan Maxwell, the public figure, is different than Jordan Maxwell, the person, the public figure can be copyrighted. And if it is copyrighted, then it could be sold as property because it has value. Because he's done all of this work, because he's built up this persona and has all of this stuff underneath him, all of this work that he's amassed over this amount of time, that is all property. And that could be considered a tangible thing and could be then sold as copyright. And if he is in contract with maybe a publishing company or something like that, or a company that represents him, he might have signed some document that he didn't understand what he was signing.
When was the last time somebody read the Facebook terms and conditions?
Never. Never. Maybe one guy.
Yeah, and I think we put all of these assumptions on everybody, like, oh, he's done all this great research, surely he can do this, but I don't know, maybe after 50 years of reading, like, books as thick as the average US voter, you kind of get past this sort of thing and go by general impressions. I have no idea what the explanation is. It just seems to me, my gut tells me that it's a psychopathic scumbag who manipulated him into doing something that was against his and everybody else's interests. That's at least what my instincts tell me, and I've been looking for a little post that I put on Facebook the other day talking about who this guy actually is. And here we are. Joseph Dolezal. Now, as soon as I made a post about this, I had a number of people within the truth movement come forward to me privately saying that they've done business with this person before, and this is exactly the kind of thing he does. Long track record of it. I'm thinking that this is actually the whole point of exposing psychopaths, so that there's a breadcrumb trail, you know?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's my thoughts on it anyway.
Is the people private, you don't have to give any details, but are the stories similar to what happened to...
Hello, I'm so sorry. I've had, like, people calling me on the landline phone here.
Tell them you're on live radio.
I just did. I even used the F word to give it that little bit of extra oomph. you know what's great about live radio is that microphones have a mute button, and if you're savvy, you can say things to people off air, and the audience is never aware. Unless, of course, you confess that you just did it.
Which you haven't done.
No. Never. Well, see, moving on from this, also in New Zealand, I'm kind of taking up our segment here, Suzanne, but there's this show, Campbell Live, that has won virtually every media award, and what's happening now is they've done a few stories that could be considered left-wing, if you were politically naive, and as a result, allegedly, the new CEO, who is very good friends, apparently, with the right-wing Prime Minister, is going to have that show pulled because of quote-unquote low ratings. And a massive protection campaign has started up around the public. People are pissed. Like, everybody in this country kind of respects this television broadcaster, John Campbell. Probably one of our most prestigious mainstream media journalists. and in my opinion, being mainstream doesn't make you prestigious. So they kind of cancel each other out, you know, like if you, like the rules of guy cheating, if it doesn't count if you're doing two girls at the same time, because they cancel each other out, you know. But the thing about this is quite simple, really. You've got a broadcaster who's willing to do what the Fourth Estate's job is, to be a watchdog on the powerful, right? To keep the public informed about important things that are going on. Thus is their function. That's why they're an essential part of a quote-unquote democracy as the Fourth Estate. Now, they're not having their ratings pulled because they didn't do their job. They're having their show pulled because they did. Now, I don't even like the guy. I don't even like his show. However, I understand and recognise the threat to the public discourse that is posed by the pulling of it. And so I'm making a tactical decision to support the show and hopefully not get it cancelled, considering it's with the largest private media corporation in New Zealand, MediaWorks. And MediaWorks, their former CEO, is now the government communications minister. Only a month or two after being elected the government communications minister and appointed by the Prime Minister, who was good friends with him at the time, brokered a $49 million bailout in unpaid licensing fees to the company MediaWorks that he was formerly CEO of. It's not that complicated when you really think about it. Okay, if you look with a cynical mind, don't think about conspiracy, just think about what you got here. What you got is friends of the Prime Minister supporting a private corporation, and there's a show on that private corporation that doesn't support the Prime Minister, and it gets cancelled. Is it too complex to comprehend now, you know?
Exactly. It's simple.
But anyway, that's enough from me and enough from this corner of New Zealand. But yeah, about Jordan Maxwell, if anybody else wants to help, you really kind of need to email this Joseph Dolezal, JOSEFDOLEZAL, Joseph Dolezal. His email is, ironically, helpjordanmaxwell@gmail.com. That's the email account that I received a complaint on my YouTube channel for. And if you can find, I don't know, there's got to be some way to help Jordan, to stick up for him. I'll see if I can get in contact with him to coordinate. I don't know what to do, but if you could send helpjordanmaxwell@gmail.com and ask them very politely and respectfully, no abuse or anything, to stop what they're doing with Jordan Maxwell, to let him go, to release his intellectual property, to stop trying to copyright anything. It doesn't matter whether or not they have a right. It doesn't matter whether or not there was an initial contract. What they're doing is immoral. That, in and of itself, in terms of the truth movement, is not a grey area. It's pretty black and white. What you're doing, Joseph, is wrong. Give him back his stuff, mate.
I want to get back to what you were talking about this journalist in New Zealand. We have to realize that, at least here in the United States, free speech means free speech. I don't have to agree with you, but you should have the right to say it. When your right to say it is impeded, then my right to say it is impeded. We get that confused sometimes with, I don't like what they're saying, so they shouldn't say it. I don't like that newspaper, so they should be out of business. I don't like that website, so they should take it down. I don't like that YouTube video, so I'm going to complain about it. We forget that every individual under the U.S. Constitution, at least, has the right to free speech. That means everyone has the right to free speech. It's not cherry-picking the right to free speech. And just because you disagree with someone does not mean that they don't have the right to say it and say it in a public forum and have it up on YouTube and have it up on websites and share it on social media. And if you don't like it, then you just don't like it and keep going. We need to stop attacking people for the thing that we want for ourselves and start supporting people who are being attacked, whether or not we completely agree, because once they are silenced, you're next.
I think that's actually true, and I probably do completely disagree with John Campbell on virtually everything.
Right, but if he can't say it, then neither can you, and we can't have that.
Well, I support the right to free speech just as well as I don't have to agree with it. You know, I support the right to disagree. Now, what the government is doing now, and in fact, this is the exact thing that we're talking about, right? As soon as your right to free speech is gone, your right to disagree with the government is gone. Okay? Do you have any idea what kind of a monster somebody with unchecked, virtually unlimited power can turn into if nobody is even allowed under law to speak bad about them? That's where we're heading.
I want to mention something to you guys, because I thought this was ingenious. In Spain, they are not allowed to protest the Congress. They are not allowed to protest their government. And so what some people did is they created holographic versions of themselves and had it displayed outside so that they were protesting. Their holograms were protesting for them because it's not illegal for the hologram to protest. We need to get smart about what we're doing. We might take that as an example. And if you live in a country and you're listening to this broadcast where you can't go out and protest, like in Spain, then why not take that lead and let's just start creating holographic versions of ourselves and protest the hell out of everything, because they haven't outlawed holograms protesting. But also it sends a signal of the ridiculousness of these laws that say you can't stand up and speak out against your government. Now we have to go to holographic versions of ourselves. What do we have to do? Go into Second Life or World of Warcraft and create an avatar of ourselves and then start protesting? How much more ridiculous do we have to make this?
Oh my God.
For them to get it through their head?
That would actually be really hilarious. A World of Warcraft organized protest.
That would be awesome.
You just imagine all the orcs and everything gathered outside a virtual White House. What do we want? When do we want it? I mean, the way American health is going, that's about how many people will be able to turn up to a protest on foot.
Everybody from Call of Duty, hurry up and start protesting.
I'm going to protest the war by being used as a human shield on World of Warcraft or Call of Duty. Yeah, there's an infinite way of creativity. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of the interview I did a couple of days ago with Cliff High from halfpasthuman.com. I said that humanity's like a spring and you know, the elite's trying to hold it down, but no matter how hard you hold it down, just like a shock absorber, it'll start resisting more and more the more you push it down. And he says, no, you're wrong. You're using a mechanical analogy, whereas we're organic creatures. What it's more like is a spring of water. You know what happens when you try to push down a spring of water? The water starts shooting out the sides in all these kind of unpredictable directions and finding new ways and carving through the rock, and it's completely uncontrollable. And this is precisely the method of resistance which I think is required in order to defeat a system that is virtually opposite. We've got creativity. The system doesn't really have creativity. It has scumbaggery, and it's very, very different. You can have genius scumbaggery, and you can have genius creativity, but there's a great distinction between the two, obviously. How simple do things really have to be before people recognize the fact that it's pretty straightforward? This is actually the way things are, and it's real corrupt, and you have to do something about it, anything about it, in any way you can.
Exactly. Even if it means creating a holographic version of yourself. What they did is they set out an email and they had people record themselves, audio recordings of the protesting, their actual person walking, and they put all of this together and did all of this work in order to protest what their government, what their Congress was doing. That to me is ingenious. I'm flabbergasted at the creativity of these people. And so we sit here and complain about, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that. And these people said, you know, we can't do that. Let's find another way to do it. And they did. And it's incredible. And it's such a statement, not only the protest itself, but the meaning behind it, that we're going to do this whether you like it or not. And we'll find a way to do this. Why don't we take that example here in the United States? If you're listening in another country, take this example and use it to your advantage. If you can recreate that or take it a step farther and become more creative in the way that you can protest and get your message heard, absolutely. We have the ability. We have the access to the same technology that they do. We're just not using it in the same ways that they are. And that's our detriment. We're scared of the internet. We're afraid of it. We need to stop being afraid of it. We need to stop being scared. And we need to go out there and find new and inventive ways to get our messages across, just like they did in Spain.
Yeah. Have you heard of the saying, swords to plowshares?
No.
No? Well, it's kind of an analogy how you can turn a weapon of war, a sword, into something that can actually help people survive and feed themselves. You can use it as a plow as well if you modify it. And I think what's happening with the internet now is it was originally designed as a plow, but people are turning it into a sword. The internet is, I think, experiencing an almost creative innovation in the art of war, a weaponization of information. And let's face facts here. Information, if you're receiving it from anywhere, probably mainstream media sources, controlled opposition, etc., the information you're listening to is weaponized. Okay? Back in the day when Edward Bernays, before the nephew of Sigmund Freud, rose to power and gave everybody public relations as his gift to the world and propaganda, people were a lot more simple. Today, people are a lot more sophisticated, but that doesn't mean that the advertising hasn't become more sophisticated as well. The guy invented product placement, and we still have product placement today. It's a mainstay of advertising in a lot of places. Let's face facts. We have to fight, and tools of war don't always take the shape of a gun or a dagger. Sometimes it is words that can strike the deepest blows to the enemy. That's why you have to speak out as much as you can, because you never know what word you might speak that could be the trigger for somebody else to wake up.
Exactly. And we have to the truth movement has been industrialized. It's now a commodity. They've got t-shirts, bumper stickers, and products, and celebrities, and movies, and books, and music, and anything you can think of. So what it originally was, the inspiration for it, needs to be brought back to light. And a new generation of independent journalists and theorists and researchers need to go back before the industrialization of the alternative movement and go back to what its inspiration was and bring that back forward. Otherwise, it's just going to become, once the mainstream picks it up, it'll become a trend, it'll become part of a generation, it'll be good for 10 years, and then it'll show up on VH1 or pop-up video or something stupid like that.
You know, pop-up video hasn't been on air in New Zealand for like 10, 15 years, okay? And I upload a lot of videos. I upload multiple gigabytes per day of videos on average. And for some reason, that little pop-up video little thing, I can't get it out of my head. And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about weaponized advertising and branding and all of that kind of stuff. Every time,
yes.
Every time I drag a file that's like 3 gigabytes into the thing to upload, I just get it in my head, pop in the video.
Right. Ask for a Kleenex. You don't ask for a facial tissue. You ask for a Coke when you really mean any soda. We need to move this to the extent that it's a household name. But in order to do that, you have to retain its integral in ideology instead of industrializing it and turning it into a commodity, which is it is in the beginning stages of becoming.
Suzanne,
and it's very sad to me.
No. I think we're thinking about this in the wrong way. I think it becoming a commodity is actually creating an alternative economy. Now, if there is an alternative economy that exists outside of the main economy, that is, what was it James Corbett was saying on my show there? Peer-to-peer economy, where all the individuals who actually support your cause and everything support it by doing certain things. Now, it depends, though, because there's a lot of infighting and there's a lot of suspicion in the movement, and because of the nature of conspiracy and scumbaggery, it lends to mistrust, and it also lends to cognitive infiltration. And so it's sort of like a balancing act between how paranoid is healthy while still being able to create an alternative economy and let people participate in it in their own free will, in their own free way. Now, do you think the Truth Movement is doing a job of policing itself? For anybody who's been accused of being a shill or anything like that, are they being exposed? Is the movement actually kind of like dethroning and are people being punished for being scumbags? There was the Santilli incident where his network collapsed, I think, and all people involved with it scattered like roaches. And it seems to me like that was sort of poetic after a whole lot of nasty stuff that he'd done to many, many people. I mean, you know, let alone he sort of allowed them an incident to demonize the entire Truth Movement with by saying he wanted to shoot Hillary Clinton in the nether regions. And that's the kindest word I'll put for it. It's not a direct quote. But yeah, I think we are, to a large degree, policing ourselves, exposing ourselves, and some of us are even wearing trench coats while doing it. Sorry, Suzanne, go ahead.
Oh, no. I don't think that the Truth Movement is doing a very good job of policing itself. I think that the paranoia that has been instilled for the last two decades is actually showing itself in a very detrimental way. And I see the audience members absolutely affected by the paranoia in a very self-destructive way. And it's saddening to me because there is such wonderful, beautiful things to be had in this world. And everyone, the majority of people that I talk to who are deep in the Truth Movement, who are audience members, are affected by this in a very, very negative way. They cannot function in their life. They're too scared to even do anything. And I don't think that that's a good thing. I don't think that the truth should set you into your basement and lock you away. I think the truth is supposed to set you free. So,
hey guys, we've got 2 minutes. So you want to give out your websites and any closing thoughts?
Go for it, Suzanne.
My website is OccupyCorporatism.com. My show is Hardline with Suzanne Posel on American Freedom Radio, 8 p.m. Central, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm also on United We Strike, and thank you very much.
And I am on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday. That's 9 till 11 Central, 7 till 9 Pacific, and 10 till midnight Eastern Time. And those of you in the New Zealand time bracket, comma, roll off, there is a 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. showing of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio every week, 4 days, Tuesday through Friday, for those of us who are living in the future and don't have to get up to work on a Monday.
It's always a pleasure to have both of you on. I enjoy the banter, and I agree with you, Suzanne. We have to get back to the true meaning of what this movement should be about. Yes, I like the t-shirts and bumper stickers, but it has to be about truth and getting the truth out. And you both help us do that here every month on the UnitedWeStrike.com radio marathon. I'm going to take us out with a song called We Are the 99% by Stephen Phillips, and then we'll be right back with a whole host of others from the UnitedWeStrike.com family to have our roundtable. Stick with us. We'll be right back.